For me, museum going has always been a religious experience. Let me explain. I grew up on the south side of Chicago. My synagogue was in Hyde Park, and the route in between them passed by the Museum of Science and Industry. And my parents could expect a regular chant from the back seat, "Museum, museum, museum." And they gave in often enough that I, by the age of 8, became the tour guide for my extended family of 52 first cousins. And I came to feel that almost every part of the museum was a second home to me, except for the stairwell with the creepy body slices. But the rest was my home. I can see we have some people who've been there. And it was my place, my museum, 46 weeks of the year. And those other 6 weeks, well, that's my story. You see, the Museum of Science and Industry, I see someone in the front row. How many people have been there? Fantastic. Then you know that it's a huge institution, 400,000 square feet of exhibits. And when it was put together, it was Julius Rosenwald, the Jewish philanthropist, who had gone to Europe, with his 12-year-old son, seen the Deutsches Museum, said Chicago needs to have one of these, came back, agreed to take the white elephant of the 1893 White City, the Palace of Fine Arts, and turn it into a science museum with the stipulation that he wouldn't put his name on it. He said, if I put my name on it, everyone will think it's paid for in perpetuity. But my mother still called it the Rosenwald Museum. So I grew up when other people wanted to be policemen or college football stars or something else. All I wanted to be was a guard at the museum because that's what I thought were the only jobs at a museum, to be a guard. And I sort of let that dream pass by, but through a series of unbelievable coincidences, I end up talking my way into becoming an analyst at the museum and have a meteoric rise over 3 years to becoming vice president for programs. And now I have only two challenges. First, that creepy stairwell. I got past it. And then those other 6 weeks. For you see, in that 6 week period, the Museum of Science and Industry ran the most cherished Yuletide event in the city of Chicago, Christmas Around the World. And now I was the maven of Christmas. Now, you're going to probably be asking yourself, how did a science museum end up hosting this annual event? Well, you see, Rosenwald was correct in thinking that finances would be a challenge. He dies a year before the museum opens in 1933, and by 1940, it's practically bankrupt. And they get the guy who ran the 1933 Chicago World's Fair, a man by the name of Lennox Lohr, who has all sorts of great ideas, you know, corporate exhibits and other things. But one of these ideas is to have Trees of Captive Nations, which will be an exhibit put together by the communities of Northwest Chicago, which generally didn't visit the museum. And they are ethnic communities, largely Southern and Eastern European, and it could be practically free, because the communities would put together the trees, they put together performances for the empty spaces, and this would be a way to attract a fairly sizable audience without any cost. Well, by the time I get there, this has been going on for 50 years. And so it's a fairly well-embedded tradition. And I'm having some anxiety as I approach the first meeting that I am to lead. It's in the Science Theater, one of my favorite spaces. When I was a kid, Carl, the science demonstrator, had shown off the newest technology, microwave. They took two open plates, put an ear of corn in between the two microwave plates, and I always sat in the front row because that was a guarantee of the popcorn going right into my lap. So I had very warm feelings about this. By the way, Carl was able to have children. So I thought, well, maybe this is a good omen. Now, as a new guy, I thought I should introduce some new ideas. So I came and said, well, maybe we could put a little science into this. How about the biology of poinsettias, the chemistry of eggnog? And they looked at me the way you're looking at me now, like I came from another planet. They felt I could be safely ignored, and they went on. Now, I was called in every time there was a little crisis, like the Hawaiian performing group that decided that they needed to be au naturel underneath the Gratz skirts. I had to explain that while I appreciated their authenticity, this was a family museum. Then we had, you picture the year is 1992, we had the Croat performance where the speaker yelled out, "Death to the Serbs." And when I tried to suggest that this wasn't in the holiday spirit, the response I got was, "They started it, they stole our ornaments." So that year passed, and I got a little bolder in the second year. I thought, well, maybe some other holidays could be introduced here. And that's when I ran into my first opposition. And it came from one of the two other Jewish administrators of the museum, Carl. Carl had been there for 30 years, gradually rising to be assistant director of operations, and he had two objections. First, it's bad for us. You'll make trouble, and people will attribute it to your ethnicity. And then secondly, he said, you're going to perpetuate the idea that Hanukkah is the Jewish Christmas. And I thought about this in many different ways, but I thought about how I felt as a child in those 6 weeks of the year when my museum wasn't mine anymore. And I thought about kids from all sorts of backgrounds and said, there's got to be a solution here. So I proposed that we have a separate exhibit called Holidays of Light that would cover not only Hanukkah, but Diwali and Kwanzaa and a number of other events to try to get in Eid al-Fitr, which is the end of Ramadan. I had to have a subtitle, Holidays of Light and Enlightenment, because there are no lights associated with holiday. Stretch a little. So in any case, this actually happened. And what delights me is that I've been gone from the museum now for 15 years. Oh, by the way, I did include in that first year physics of dreidels, but that did not make it. But I can tell you that there is still a Holidays of Light event to this day, and I would like to think that Mr. Rosenwald, even though his name isn't on the building, would be happy to see it.